Welcome back to Full Circle Reviews. This episode is on Ghostbusters Afterlife, the sequel to the 1984 Ghostbusters franchise. This was released November 19th, 2021. We have our wonderful co-hosts here, joined by Justin.
That's me.
And Luke.
That's me.
And Kristen here, hosting. So the movie starred Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon, Finn.
I know, Coon. Interesting last name.
Wolfhard, McKenna Grace, and then a small casting of the original Ghostbusters. Well,
don't forget Logan Kim is podcast. We have to mention podcast.
Yeah, well, we will. I didn't realize that was his name. I apologize.
It's all good.
I just heard two names there that made me kind of perk up in disbelief that group of parents actually named their child that.
Carrie Coon.
Carrie Coon. And
apparently
then,
she's a good actress, but she didn't really have a part in this movie.
We'll get to that, Justin. Okay.
So, Luke, would you like to start us off with a synopsis since you are the Ghostbusters guru?
That's me. I am the Ghostbusters guru. I grew up to it, and it was everything to me for a period of my life. So a synopsis of the movie Ghostbusters Afterlife would be, it has been, I want to say, what was it, like 37 years since the 37 years since the 1984 original movie, the events of that movie. And we follow the family of, it's left ambiguous at first of whose family this might be. They never come out right and say it until halfway through, I think.
Yeah, they don't say it, but I feel like you knew immediately.
I don't know. I feel like they shrouded his face. They didn't. I feel like they wanted to leave it. Well, of course. Yeah. But yeah, I feel like they tried to make it kind of.
I did not know immediately.
Okay. But it turns out it's Egon's family.
Yeah.
It's we follow Egon's daughter, his estranged daughter, his granddaughter.
Phoebe.
Phoebe.
Who's like him reincarnate.
Yeah, definitely. I would say that. And what is the son, the older brother's name?
Trevor.
Trevor. Okay. Yeah.
That sounds about right. We follow them as they move into his dilapidated house out in the middle of nowhere. It's kind of like a farmhouse. And
Oklahoma?
It is Oklahoma.
Okay.
And they kind of adjust that. And they find a lot of his ghost-busting gear. They find a lot of his... I don't want to say memorabilia, but just evidence that he was going a little mad.
Or actively busting ghosts.
Actively busting ghosts. Yeah. But as the movie goes on, we see there was a purpose to all of it. So it's, I'd say that's my synopsis there.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Well said.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So the director of this one was actually the son of the director of the original movie, which I find really interesting. So the original director was Ivan Reitman. The director of Afterlife was Jason Reitman.
Reitman. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry, he said it under his breath over there, so I'll make sure you heard it.
I missed it. Okay. Apologize. Gotcha. Anyway, so Afterlife was actually produced by Ivan, but it was directed by Jason.
Okay.
So I thought that was kind of interesting that he still had his hand in the movie.
Yeah, that's cool.
I did like that at the end of this, there was also a cameo with Sigourney Weaver. I thought that was
cool.
Pretty cool.
Was it post-credit?
It was.
Or was it like intro to credit?
It was post-credit.
It was post-credit.
Huh? Yeah.
Because we had a feeling something might be happening after the credits.
Right. I believe Justin said stay for after the credits and Luke was like, no, it's not going to happen.
I just had a feeling.
And then
it was a good enough movie to where if they felt it too, when they did their initial tests in the studio, they would do a post-credit screen.
I agree.
Yeah. To get you excited about another one.
You're right.
So initial reactions, we'll start with Justin.
I was very nervous going into this movie, but I found myself just loving it. Like from initial scenes to all the way through the end. I love the tie back to the original Ghostbusters and just the overall nostalgic feeling. I thought the special effects were great without detracting away from the way they were originally portrayed in the first and second movie. I think probably my favorite thing about this movie is that it completely wiped the slate clean and removed the 2016 Ghostbusters, like out of any conversation regarding Ghostbusters ever. Because it just,
that was brutal. That 2016 was brutal.
It was brutal. And this, you know, reconnected to the original story without trying to be a direct reboot. And I like the fact that the kids are like, you know, the next generation. So it was overall, I think, great movie.
I'll jump in. I think it was too. I actually thought it did a great job of playing homage to the first movie. I thought it was great as a standalone with very direct ties to the first movie. But if you hadn't been a Ghostbusters fan your whole life, you could still enjoy this movie. I have liked Ghostbusters as well. I can't say that I was nearly as much of a fandom as Luke.
I don't think anybody was.
And that's okay.
Few
and far between.
Yes.
But I really enjoyed this particular movie. I really did not enjoy the 2016. I thought it was painful.
I had like a couple moments that were,
But I really liked that they didn't try to make the adults the Ghostbusters, because I feel like you'd have no, you wouldn't be able to not compare it.
Exactly.
Right. And you'd have to compare Paul Rudd to Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray. And I love Paul Rudd, but it wouldn't be the same. Right. So I thought there was a really brilliant way of doing it where it was the kids instead of the adults in this one.
I 100% agree with you. When Paul Rudd got into it, I got, as the teacher, what was his name? Mr. Gruberson.
Something ridiculous like
that. And I got kind of worried because I was like, oh no, now it's going to be like the mom and him and maybe the two kids. And I was like, it's just not going to work like that. The dynamic wouldn't be there. So when it became the four kids, although I thought like the last girl was kind of forced into there, that's like my only negative thing about it. But I thought the other kids naturally like fit the spot.
I'll agree. And I agree with you on the filming. I thought the CGI through, I'd say probably three quarters of it was perfect.
Yeah.
I thought it was the right amount. It wasn't overbearing. It wasn't irritating.
Yeah.
I thought the filming, the sound editing, just the film editing, I thought all of it was great. I thought they did an excellent job. So Luke, what are your thoughts now that we've expressed, what did you think?
You're the aficionado.
Well, I'm with both of you. I have elements of both of what you just said in mine. I was nervous too. I was very nervous that it was going to be disrespected. That, I mean, because let's face it, in Hollywood, they kind of have a habit of, unless it's an established and very popular franchise that has a solid fan base, they usually have a habit of just disrespecting the shit out of fans.
Reinventing the wheel.
Yes.
And doing a shitty job.
Yeah. Okay. And so I was nervous, and I would say maybe 10 minutes in, I felt like we were on the right track. I felt like it just felt right. There's a lot to it that I can't put into words, but it just, being a diehard Ghostbusters fan, I found myself just enjoying the ride, enjoying the moment, and really feeling thankful once all was said and done that they did do this movie like that, like the way they did, where it was so respected, where it did have callbacks to the past movies. And that, yes, I totally agree that they didn't reference the 2016 reboot at all.
Because threw that garbage away without having to mention it.
Yeah. I'd like to just, you know, wipe that from history.
Scrap it.
Yeah. So I mean, I absolutely loved the ride. And I mean, I even applauded when it was done too.
You did.
You were very happy.
You started a slow clap a little bit.
I did. And I usually, by the end of the movies, am hating life when we go to movies, but this one was kind of refreshing.
So I wrote something down here and I said it reestablished the connection to the Ghostbusters franchise without tarnishing the brand or upsetting loyal fans. You as a loyal fan, would you say that's how it actually was?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I would agree.
Okay.
And we have agreement.
I know. It's kind of weird. We've been getting along.
It's kind of weird.
Well, we have other movies to review. Don't worry.
We do.
I hate your face.
Well, the first one, the 1984 version, had critics exclaimed that it was an exception to believe that exaggerate. It was an exception, sorry, to the belief that exaggerated special effects would have taken away from the movie. Basically, that they did a great job having the movie hold its own with the special effects and not be trumped by it. And I think that held true for this one as well.
Totally agree.
I do. I think it's part of the way as they showed it. Like, it was modern, but it still looked like the old style, even when they did like Egon, when he came back and he was like the apparition, you know, it still looked like older style CGI.
It did.
But crystal clear. They you know what I mean? So I thought they did a great job of not trying to be like, ooh, look what we can do. This is so modern. You don't recognize it. They made the characters and I think the feeling recognizable.
So for me, it reminded me a lot of Stranger Things.
Okay.
And I'll explain why. Not just because the character Trevor is Michael from Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. But anyone who's watched Stranger Things will know that it has a very authentic 80s feel.
It does.
The filming, the music, the lighting, but it's crystal clear. Mm-hmm. So same thing. I felt like they did in this. They really did a great job of modernizing the technology, but keeping the feel.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
So I don't know if you guys realize this, but the original movie was actually written by Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd and one other person.
I want to say it was Reitman.
It was.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It was. And so I didn't realize that. Did you know, though, that Dan Aykroyd wrote it in mind for him and John Belushi to play?
Yeah, he was going to be playing Venkman.
After the Blues Brothers?
Yeah, he was going to originally take the role of Bill Murray.
Really?
Of Peter Venkman, yeah.
Wow.
And it was because of Reitman that they changed. They scrapped the idea of Belushi and brought in
Belushi was still alive at that point.
In 84. I would assume, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm not positive on the timing on that, but he...
convinced him to be the replacement.
Well, he's the one that really expanded the story that Aykroyd had written. Aykroyd wrote it because he had a fascination with celestial and supernatural.
Okay.
And it was a first time where they put supernatural and comedy together successfully. And so it was because of Reitman that it expanded to be as successful. Cause I think it would have been I love the Blues Brothers and I love John Belushi, but I think it would have been a very different movie.
Oh yeah. Total butterfly effect on that. I seriously doubt it would have been the smash hit that it was without Bill Murray's dry, sarcastic wit as Venkman.
100%.
And slightly dirty perversion at the same time.
Yeah, he did. He was kind of a slime ball.
And not really slightly. And the first one was pretty outward. Yeah.
Oh, he was point blank.
Second one, he was trying to be a little more tactful, but
yeah.
So, let's talk about the characters in this afterlife sequel. We mentioned Phoebe.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about Phoebe? Who is Phoebe? Talk to me.
Phoebe is Egon Spengler's granddaughter.
Granddaughter.
Spitting image of him. I thought Phoebe was a guy for the first 30 minutes.
Dope haircut. Or like transgender.
Something like that.
Non-binary. No, that's sexual orientation.
I got
whatever
worried.
It is to where they're going to, you know, choose their gender at a later age.
I got worried.
Well, either way, I feel like I'm not alone in thinking that it was a boy.
So I'm going to piggyback on that. I was very concerned. I was more concerned about that aspect of the movie than the movie itself. Right. I know you guys were a little nervous going into it. I was hopeful, but that concerned me with everything going on in politics right now.
I was going to get involved in the story.
That I was going to make a political stance that she's trans as a child and will choose what she is later. And I really was hoping that they didn't go there and I'm glad that they didn't.
Yeah.
Cause
that's not what the movie's about.
It's not. Yeah. And that wasn't a place for that kind of a political positioning.
Correct. Right?
Regardless of what you believe on that and where your stance is, I just don't think that this movie would have been
the
platform. Correct. So I apologize, Luke, go ahead. You were talking about Phoebe.
Oh yeah. So I agree with you that it felt like that for me as well. Like that it could have gone that way. And I'm grateful it didn't. Phoebe comes off like a awkward, but extremely likable kid. Like her personality was kind of magnetic a bit.
Yeah.
Like kind of a know-it-all, but not to the point where obnoxiousness comes
She's
out.
Precocious.
Precocious. Yeah.
Definitely precocious. And I wrote down at one point that she was a precocious kid. And it was surprising me that you were liking her character because typically you don't like precocious children, but she had just enough connection to people and other personality traits that made you connect with her to where it was like the right balance, the right mixture.
Correct.
The dad jokes.
Yeah. I feel that way 100% because I generally have it irks me when there's very precocious kids not because they're brilliant or they're smart or they're wise beyond their years. That's great. I am 100% nerd, king of the nerds. I'm behind that all the way. But oftentimes they're obnoxious and don't understand social boundaries.
Yeah.
And I thought that they did an excellent job with her character development of portraying her as a little bit outcasty, a little bit geeky, but you couldn't help but love her. Yeah. And I wrote down immediately, I like Phoebe. And then a few notes later in the movie, I love Phoebe. Mm-hmm. And I was worried that I wasn't going to continue to, because I was afraid they were going to expand her character in a direction I didn't like, but I thought she was amazing.
Well, being the Ghostbusters nerd that I am, I feel like they really, really thought Phoebe out.
Yes.
And thought like, okay, if Egon Spengler, if the that character was going to have a granddaughter, what character traits would that granddaughter have? And they nailed it. Yeah. I felt like they really nailed it.
I agree with you.
When I thought her acting performance really nailed it.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yes.
I mean, her delivery and the different
dad jokes.
Just the different dad jokes and her range of delivery, because it was like it'd go from fully logical and calm to excited and agitated about something that's going on to slightly emotional at times. Like, she went through the spectrum as an actress.
Yes.
With a character that on the surface level seems like very one-sided.
Right.
Agreed. I think she did an amazing job, because the character could have been very flat.
Yeah.
And it wasn't.
That was kind of Egon's thing. Yeah. He was flat, as flat as a flathead screwdriver. I mean,
but endearing.
But endearing. Yeah. But just boring as shit. But they made Phoebe work.
So what's your guys' favorite Phoebe joke?
So I wonder if your favorite one matches mine.
It might.
So the one I wrote down in the theater was, what does a hamster and a cigarette have in common? And then she paused for emphasis and very deadpan says, nothing until you stick them in your mouth and light them on fire.
That had to be an original. Like,
I laughed.
By a little girl?
I laughed.
I mean, no, not by a little, but like them, the production the company, coming up with it.
Yeah, I'd never heard that one. I had the other one that I really liked.
Wait, you didn't? What about me?
Go ahead. Yes, please.
Okay, continue. So mine was not the hamster one, but I remember laughing very, very, very hard at that, because it came out of nowhere and I did not expect that from the child. I did not expect that,
no.
But I did not expect this one. It was, what do you call a dead polar bear? And she pauses for emphasis. Do you remember what she said?
No.
She says, anything you want. It can't hear you anymore.
That joke really sums up her sense of humor.
Her sense of humor, yeah.
But her acting was so excellent, because she was completely deadpan. She did not give anything away on her face, but there was a twinkle in her eye.
Uh-huh. That's it. Yeah.
That was excellent. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so good.
The other one I had was, a grasshopper walks into the bar. The bartender says, we have a drink named after you. And the grasshopper says, you have a drink named Steve?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say that was my vote right there. I LOL'd.
You LOL'd?
I LOL'd.
Nice.
I just loved all of those. I actually really liked the part two where her and her mom would look at each other and say, don't be yourself, and kind of smile.
Yeah, it was like their way.
It was their way of acknowledging each other's real personality, right? Their weaknesses, their strengths, their flaws.
And owning it.
Yeah. And I loved that. I loved that connection with that line between them. But I also loved, as a viewer, like, yes, it's okay to recognize that she's a precocious kid, yeah, or she's not going to fit in with everybody she meets. And even her brother saying, you know, basically he'd be shocked if she made friends at school.
But she did. Yeah.
Which leads us into podcast. Mm. Luke, you want to talk about podcast?
Podcast. Just my initial reaction to him was worry that this was going to be a obnoxious character, that he was going to be shoved down our throats. He wasn't.
Even though his character was obnoxious.
Yes, was obnoxious, yeah. But you know, and you guys know, my patience for bad characters is thin. Mm-hmm. But I felt him meeting the threshold and then taking a couple steps back by the end. So I felt like he kind of redeemed himself a bit.
Justin, what are your thoughts on podcast?
I thought he was refreshing. It was a nice balance, you know, the quirkiness, the socially, I wouldn't say awkward, but socially different. Mm-hmm. You know, way above his years in intelligence, you know, not as quite as smart as Phoebe, right? But I mean, the kid has his own podcast in elementary school already and is pretty versed in what the supernatural and everything that's going around, right? So I really liked it. I really liked his addition to the movie. I don't think that it would have been the same feel without his character. So
I agree.
So you're saying that his name should have been Sprite instead.
Why? Because he's integral to the mixture.
No, you said refreshing.
Well, it could be refreshing too.
I tried for a Phoebe joke there.
So, okay. So podcast.
I got it.
I love.
You're an ass.
Are you guys done?
No, we're not.
Oh, good. I love podcasts.
You like podcasts?
I thought he was epic.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just enough of him. You could see from the nerdiness and the quirkiness exactly why they'd be best friends, mm-hmm. and why they'd want to be lab partners and why that relationship would work. And I felt like he was a great supporting character to her. Mm-hmm. He was great as a standalone as well, but he absolutely was a supporting character to Phoebe. Mm-hmm. And I thought that they mirrored and complemented each other very well.
They did.
I was nervous too, because I thought, oh God, what are they going to do? They're not going to be successful, two precocious kids. Mm. And they were.
They were very successful, in my opinion. Yeah.
And I think that that's another reason why this movie makes me think a lot of Stranger Things. Because Stranger Things is a cast of precocious kids.
But they all balance each other out.
But they all work.
Yeah.
And there's enough character development to where they're all standalone characters and they blend. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that they did excellently with this movie, was those two kids. The other kids that came into the group... could take him or leave him.
Yeah, like Trevor could be replaced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I don't think they could have replaced Phoebe or podcast.
What was
though.
The girl's name? The last girl that worked at the restaurant with him.
I didn't catch her name.
Then that there's something to be said about that.
Right. I thought they were both unremarkable.
The token black character.
Well, she was the Winston.
The Winston, yes. Exactly.
Winston was the last addition to the original group, and
Winston was the driver, right?
Depends on the medium.
It depends on
if it's the cartoon, he's the driver mechanic,
okay.
You know, kind of a handyman, but the movie, he was just there for the paycheck.
That's right.
And got,
they hired him, right?
They hired him last when they had so much business.
Okay.
Yeah. So I thought that they did a great job with Phoebe and with podcasts. And I do think that if they had two more eccentric, very strong characters, it may not have worked.
Yeah.
It would have detracted. So I think that it's okay. They're unremarkable. Yeah. I just wish they were slightly more remarkable.
Well, I mean, Trevor had a role, the last girl, can't remember her name. She really didn't. She just picked up a suit and put one on with him.
She was there by association.
Yeah, there by association. Yeah. Wanted to be cool too. You know, his was, he's still related to Egon and he found the vehicle and some, you know, smarter than he looks because he got it running. Mm-hmm. Right. And
with some help. Yeah.
Got it. Joyride. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Grandfather helped him from beyond the grave. Mm-hmm. What's your guys' favorite scene in this movie?
Mm. Kristen, you have to go first, or Justin, one of you guys.
I'll go. Two? I'll take it.
Okay.
My very favorite scene was the first trapping scene.
Okay.
I thought it was the strongest scene in the movie. I feel like it was, you're on the edge of your seat. I thought it was excellent the way they had her sliding in and out in that seat in the car. Well, they're still trying to figure out how the car works and the trap is working, and they added the addition of the remote control car with the trap on it.
So that was the second trapping, right?
Was it the second trapping? I thought it was the first one.
I thought that was the first.
It was the first one because they were trying to trap the metal muncher.
That Paul Rudd let out.
Oh, that's right. Because when she found it, it was already trapped in there.
Yeah. Yes.
That's right. Okay.
So I thought that scene was excellent. I thought the cinematography, it gave you all the Ghostbuster feels.
Yeah.
It was right on. I'm going to use that quote again. Dead on, balls accurate. And
I've been using that quote like a motherfucker.
Have you? Yeah. Yes. So I thought it was.
Hate the movie though.
He might. And that's okay. Anyway, back to me here. I thought the scene was great. I thought the directing of that scene was excellent. I thought the sound editing in that scene, mm-hmm. the CGI, I thought it was all perfectly balanced.
Yeah. The suspense, yes. The thrill of it.
Yes.
Nice. And the funny thing about that scene is it was a long scene.
It was a very long scene.
But
there's a lot of destruction.
It was consistent in the kind of excitement it gives you.
It's like its mini plot line.
Yeah. It was a long scene that in any other movie, any other medium, I might have hated, but I enjoyed it. And for all my scene that comes to mind for me is when Phoebe is holding the proton pack at the end and it pans down to show the ghostly white hands holding it with her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And pans up to see Harold Ramis's specter. That one just, I didn't even realize I had goosebumps on the bottom of my feet, but I realized that. And then a close second would be when you hear Bill Murray's voice, when you hear Venkman's voice, when they're going up against Gozer and you think all is lost.
Yeah.
And when you hear that, I think I audibly gasped and
teared up a little bit.
A little bit. I got to be honest. It's just, it was such a huge part of my life. You know, I'm a 39-year-old guy, but still I won't be.
Did you have Ghostbusters bed sheets?
Yeah.
Nice.
I had Ghostbusters everything.
I had Ninja Turtle ones.
Me too.
I still do.
Yes. Do you really?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Dope.
And that is the King of the Nerds podcast right here, kids.
I'm sure that name's probably taken though. So
what about you, Justin?
My favorite scene wasn't either of those.
Okay.
But mine's kind of connected to yours because it's the scenes right before.
Okay.
My favorite scene is when they bring in the trap to show Mr. Gruberson.
Okay.
Because I felt like that was exactly that scene is the epitome of why I like this movie, because they brought it in and he was like geeking out and nerding about it, like, you know, the nostalgia of it, just like we were watching the movie. And then when he unleashed and was like, holy shit, this is real. And like everything happened, you know, right away. I was just like, there's the CGI, even though it's like brand new. It just felt like one of the older movies.
And you know, the great thing about what you're talking about, too, is the sound of the proton pack being started up. The sound of.
I mean, it was eerily the same.
It was
spot on.
Yeah. I've tried to get that as my phone notification ringtone before, but it's like $4.99 to do it. I think I might just do it now.
Why don't you just record it
yourself? Why don't I just give you $5?
There's an app where you can record sounds yourself. We could just put it on there and.
Merry Christmas, Luke.
Thanks. It's a great. But the sound of the trap, the sound of the Ecto-1's siren. I love that sound.
Yes. I wrote down a couple of times where Luke said, I've got chills through the movie. I think it was really good with that.
I did.
So speaking of scenes, I want to talk about a different scene.
Okay.
As well. The scene where Phoebe moves the chess piece. She goes to bed and she wakes up and the other piece has been played.
It has been played. And she keeps playing.
Now, outside of the movie screen, if this was in real life and you did this, Luke, what would be your reaction if you woke up and another piece had been moved? Would you continue to play or would you freak out?
It's, I don't know. I'm torn. I mean, I would be creeped out. No doubt about it. In my chest, I would be creeped out, but I would want to also see, like, try and see it through.
Mm-hmm. Am I being haunted by a moron or somebody intelligent?
Yeah, just see, like, if they know the... if they know the Lancaster technique, the four checkmate move, and see how intelligent they are.
Okay.
I just made that up.
Okay. I've never heard of it.
I look like I knew what I was talking about.
I never heard of a Lancaster technique. I'm very confused. Okay. No,
but I do like chess.
I do,
nice.
Too.
I usually use the Modesto backdoor. Just kidding.
Justin, what about you? Would you have happily played chess with the ghost?
Definitely not happily, but I think I'd have to.
Well, not after the one pawn was like thrown off the chessboard. I mean, do you remember when it was like, you know, knocked it off the chessboard really violently?
Not I still want to play.
I'd want to see it through.
I'd have to. I've always had like some strange connection to weird shit happening around me and spirits and since I was a child. So I think I would naturally probably just play with it.
I could see you sitting there and playing chess and waiting for the next move and playing.
I could too.
Yeah. And then like starting to choke me and me telling it harder.
Oh God. I would have panicked if I woke up and saw the piece was moved and then I'd have to move a piece to see if it worked again.
Yeah, exactly. And you'd have to keep going.
Well, you're not a fan of the supernatural.
I am not.
Whatsoever.
No.
I am not. But I thought that was a cute scene. Where it was the, you know, bringing in grandpa playing with granddaughter a little bit. And I thought that was kind of neat. On the piggyback of that, one of the other scenes I really loved was the scene where she goes down into the basement. And she is not at all weirded out by any of the supernatural or scientific things that are happening. In fact,
even though it's all outdated technology,
it is. But when she's sitting there, she's wait, what is this? And then all of a sudden the light just pans over for her because someone's moving the light for her. And she just goes, thanks.
Like, how do you know this? And then it pans over to his degrees on the wall.
She's, oh, okay.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
I thought that was a cute way of in essence, him leading her to him.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like the stewardship of the movie and yes. her at the same time. Yeah,
I agree. I liked it too.
I was like, if you don't know by now, I am the one. Yeah.
So nice. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So we were talking about scenes a little bit. Any other scenes you guys want to bring up that you liked, disliked?
I mean, I'll just throw out the funniest scene for me please. Was Paul Rudd in Walmart with ice cream in his hand, and the terror dog, Vince Clortho, the Keymaster, has his head deep in a bag of dog food, and he, you know, Paul Rudd freezes, of course, and it looks up. And he throws the pint of ice cream at the dog. And,
that's something you would do, Justin.
Like, shrieks and runs off. I felt that was just like, you know, any other movie, I probably wouldn't have laughed at that. But it was just so cute and hilarious to me.
It was cute. And then he comes across the Stay Puffed Marshmallow guys all coming out and then trying to fight him. And
yeah, I like when Podcast is fighting him off too.
Oh, yeah.
When they're like trying to unplug all his equipment. And yeah, that was hilarious.
He roasting them?
Yes, he started roasting them at one point.
A modified taser or
something. Yeah.
That was hilarious.
I thought that was cute. What about the final battle scene? What are your thoughts?
I would say it was the only thing that like slightly let me down. Is not the battle scene itself, but like once the two Keymasters sat down and like became, they like transformed, right? Into the terror dogs. And then what was the name of the deity?
Gozer.
Gozer that came out. I was just kind of let down by what they look like after that happened.
Okay. So you mean, okay. So Gozer from the 1984 one, do you remember off the top of your head what
it looked pretty close to this one, didn't she?
I thought so too, just like more modern.
Yeah.
But still, do you remember what she looked like in that one?
Kind of.
The lit aura and everything too.
Well, what I'm asking is like, is that what you're comparing it to when you say let down?
Just
like if you were a fresh viewer.
Correct.
Okay, I get you.
Okay. What about you, Luke?
Final battle. Yeah. It did it for me, for my two favorite scenes there. I thought there was the problems they ran into, the setbacks were appropriate and were, resolved in a pretty either funny or, a convincing way. I loved how everybody got involved, and right when you think all is lost, somebody would get involved or some other like, effect would kick in and seem like they're gaining again, and then they'd falter back. So I think I was on the edge of my seat. I love the final battle personally. I thought it was very appropriate to bring Gozer back.
Yes.
I'm really glad they didn't come up with a new, like, destructor ghost. And they brought back Gozer. I
really loved Bill Murray's, you know, verbalization towards Gozer
trying to distract while Winston's grabbing his proton pack.
Yes.
And they said, we tried.
I thought that was good. So for me, I thought when I talk about the final battle scene, I'm talking about from the point where the Keymaster and Zool are now seated in front of Gozer, and then Gozer walks out and it's kind of that, oh shit, what are we going to do up until the end? Yeah. That's what I'm considering the final battle is kind of that lead up to and fight itself. I thought they did a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. I would probably rate the final battle scene as a B for me. I felt like aspects of it kind of fell a little short, not with the story or the writing or even the directing, but just the visualization. So I kind of agree with Justin. However, I think that the aspects like Luke was talking about of the additional emphasis or the additional characters that came in. I love the scene where she's holding the proton pack and the hands come over to help and support her and guide her. That was a little emotional. That was pretty cool.
Gives you the feels.
It did.
And not the pedo ones, the good ones.
I felt that the constant drag of the daddy issues from the mother in it was a little overpowering.
Yeah.
I feel like that could have been taken down a notch.
Just a smidge, at least.
A smidge, because they could have still had that aspect and subplot, but I felt like it was they made too big of a deal of that in the end scene when I felt like she was mostly a character that just checked boxes rather than a driving force through the movie.
Yeah, 100% agree with you, because I feel like they put such a spotlight on her daddy issues that yes. at some point in the movie she was going to be stripping or hooking.
I think I agree to the point where, but I felt like it was important that they have it to where Egon was looked at as this selfish person mm-hmm. and threw away all of the relationships in his life.
For nothing.
But the realization comes out, he was very selfless and yeah. was doing it to save the world essentially. Yeah. So, but I do agree. Her little quips tantrums. And one-liners and shit was getting old.
It did. It dragged for me a little bit.
Yeah, it did.
But I actually thought that overall, I think part of it for me is that that initial capture scene was so epic that I really had higher expectations and hopes for the final battle scene. And I felt like it fell a little short for me.
Okay.
But let's talk about some of the other sub characters a little bit. We talked a lot about Phoebe. We talked a lot about podcast. Mm-hmm. We mentioned the other
Gruberson, Trevor.
I felt it could have used a little bit more Gruberson, just a little.
I disagree. I can see why someone would say that.
It's okay to just disagree.
I'm kind of with you when you mentioned that it should have been more kid focused and highlighted the kids more. He was hilarious. But I feel like,
and he still was like a mentor without being uber involved.
And I feel like he was on the cusp of, if he had more, might have been overbearing and annoying. Like, okay. There was just enough to like him.
And I can see that. And there's enough to leave me wanting more.
Right.
Right. And so maybe that was the right balance of not being too much to where I felt the mother's issues got to be too much.
You just want more of him because he's the world's sexiest man now.
I love Paul Rudd, but I don't understand that voting at all.
I don't
all.
Know who votes for this shit.
No one asked me.
I know.
But I love Paul Rudd. Yeah. And hell yeah, brother. Way to go. That's a hell of a accomplishment. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily see it, but I do love him.
I mean, amazing sex appeal on that guy.
Hey, he's got great skincare routine. Whatever it is, the man hasn't aged in 30 years. He looks fantastic.
I feel like he's the poor man's Rob Lowe.
Well, maybe he just has a giant that's package. Sad.
That's sad. The poor man's Rob Lowe?
I would say he has a lot more notoriety than Rob Lowe.
I mean, Rob Lowe's beautiful.
I mean, Paul Rudd's probably done, what, at least 30 movies?
If we're talking about physical appeal, that's where Luke was going with this. Rob Lowe is a beautiful specimen.
Because you guys are talking the world's sexiest man.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's where the poor man's Rob Lowe comes in. Similar look. Just one looks like a cave troll. One looks like a Greek god.
Cave troll. Oh, Paul Rudd. Maybe a squire.
I mean,
okay.
The piss boy.
Dear Lord, kids. All right. So what about the brother, Trevor? Talk to me about Trevor.
Kind of unremarkable.
Yeah.
Like, seemed like a typical angsty teen with a subplot of a love interest that really wasn't necessary, I guess.
Fulfilled the driver mechanic role.
Yeah.
Even though I needed grandpa's help with that.
But I will say, seeing him pop out of Ecto-1 mm-hmm. and start blasting Gozer was pretty awesome.
Was pretty awesome.
Yeah, just every element of one more person coming out to help was I redeem him for that.
I think he did a good job with the role, but you know,
I felt like he was underwhelming.
He's replaceable.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that both his character and the mom's character were probably, for me, the weakest links.
Yeah.
And they were both needed. They both checked boxes in the script. Like, okay, someone's got to connect the Phoebe to grandfather. Checkbox. Somebody's got to drive them across country. Checkmark.
Yeah. They're like secondary support.
And I just feel like they could have been a little stronger. They fell short for me.
Well, it's possible that maybe we wouldn't have loved Phoebe as much if they had been. We wouldn't have been so grateful for her character if they had put more emphasis on those two characters.
I could see that.
I mean, it's a theory.
It's a theory.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I love Phoebe anyway, and I'm glad nothing detracted from her.
Well, my point is that it seems like a lot of emphasis was put on Phoebe and making her a perfect character that they wouldn't be capable of making poor characters in the rest of the movie. So I think my point is it might be intentional.
No, I get that. I just wish, for me, instead of them being like C-minus characters, they were C plus or B minus.
Gotcha.
I just feel like they could have been a smidge more better. Focused.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
That's all.
Or individualized.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So one of the aspects I want to jump into that I really love about this movie is the nerdiness, the connections to, there's the connections to the supernatural. There's the connections to history.
Science.
And science. All three. But for me, being the history major, like I was hardcore nerding out in the theater and getting really excited. And they're talking about the Sumerians and the cuneiform and Gozer. And that's all based on facts and factual, you know, history. And Gozer was a deity that was worshipped by the Sumerian people.
Really?
Yeah.
That's an amazing like tidbit for me there.
That I just thought
they
that
didn't
was so
create
cool.
a universe. They no. went off of a already existing
history.
Universe.
Yes. And I loved that. And I, you know, hadn't really caught that, even though I saw obviously the first Ghostbusters. I hadn't paid as much attention to it because I think I don't remember in the first Ghostbusters that they mentioned specifically cuneiform and
no, me either.
And the Sumerians. I know they mentioned Gozer and Zul.
Sumerians was mentioned, but I believe it was just in an exposition dialogue with from Egon when he was giving backstory on Gozer.
Correct.
And but it was a passing comment.
Yeah. And so when I saw it this time, it really brought my attention to it. And, you know, my history focus in college was ancient history. And
this is ancient.
This is ancient. And when we were talking about the Sumerians are, you know, the first known civilization that came around in the Bronze Era. I mean, it's a very, very, very old from 6th to 5th millennia BC people.
Yeah.
And so I literally sat there like, ooh, nerding out. Like, can't wait to like talk about this on the podcast. Cause nice. That's my wheelhouse.
That's your shit.
That's my shit.
Yeah.
So a little history lesson for everybody. And if you don't like history, you can feel free to tune out.
Or just yawn and be
or
respectful.
Or yawn, that's fine. But what was neat to me is they were talking about cuneiform, which is the original first written language. And it was from the Sumerians. The Sumerians were the people that were in Mesopotamia, which is the land between two rivers, the Tigris, the Euphrates. It is current day Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the folks, they became the Babylonians. So I'm sure people have heard about like the, you know, the gardens of Babylon, the, you know, Babylon in general. And so the codes of Hammurabi, which are the first written law, were actually written by the Sumerians in the cuneiform language.
And like a pillar or something.
Yeah,
right?
it's a big black stone.
Like an obelisk or something.
Yeah, okay. It is an obelisk.
Okay.
And it is the first written laws and punishments for certain crimes. And so that to me is pretty cool. It's, you know, it's in the Louvre for any of you nerds that want to go take a picture with it. Like I did. But I think they did a great job of bringing in Gozer and Zul and the deities that were worshipped and feared by these people. And I love that aspect of this.
Me too. Instead of just making something up, like Luke said, and you know, my hat's off to Aykroyd because if he wanted to originally write this movie because of his love for the supernatural and comedy, then he really did a good job of not making up a universe like you said, but using previous societies and faith/religion to really turn the tide.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool.
So Gozer, we brought up, you know, cuneiform and the Sumerians. They were also worshipped around 6000 BC was the first known worshipping of the deity Gozer. And Gozer
8,000 years ago
is an ancient ultra malignant power from another dimension.
Okay.
And that was the belief that many years ago. And was guarded by Zul, which represents the hounds of hell.
Okay.
Is the purpose of Zul. And Luke, keep me honest on the gatekeeper's name, Vince.
Vince Clortho.
Clortho. There it is.
Vince Clortho.
Okay. Thank you.
The key master.
Yes. So this whole, trifecta was actually followed by a group of people that called themselves the Cult of Gozer. They were high priests and priestesses.
And they were a separate sect.
Yes. And they were incredibly powerful and feared among the people.
Wow. I seem to remember Egon saying the Hittites.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So the Hittites, the Mesopotamians, and the Sumerians, which all became the Babylonians.
Nice.
That's some... So. Had a nerd out there for a minute, everybody.
Yeah.
So.
I like it.
Nerd away.
Yeah.
Feel free.
Anyway, I think that was a really interesting aspect of the movie. I do think it was interesting that the folks who have more of an understanding of what the Cult of Gozer is and follow it to this day feel that Zul was not visually represented correctly. However, when I've looked at a few photos of what Gozer is supposed to look like and Zul are supposed to look like. I thought they got pretty close.
Pretty spot on.
Well,
One of the things that Egon says in the 1984 one is, I think once they meet Gozer for the first time and they see her, they say, I thought Gozer was a man. And Egon makes a point of saying, it's whatever it wants to be. So that, and then we see that later on when Gozer comes back as the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. So, but if that's, I don't know, that just came to mind, I guess. Egon,
And of course, these are open to interpretation because it's personified by the believers and the followers, right? And so they can have different visualizations of what they think. I mean, that goes back to just thinking about when you read a book and then you see it on TV or you see it on as a movie, your interpretation of what a character or creature is supposed to look like is not always what it looks like on screen. It's a different interpretation.
Yeah, I mean, even playing a game of telephone, it's as simple as that, how quickly things can change.
Correct. So that was my nerd out session. Gents, do you have any aspects or plot lines or scenes or things that you want to bring up? I know we're planning on having Luke talk about some of the homage that was paid.
But did they pay homage to the movie for you, Luke, to the original franchise?
I felt that they, respected it as much as I've seen any franchise respect anything else. Like, cause I mean, Ghostbusters 1984 and the sequel are kind of in a class that, okay, I'll just say that the 2016 Ghostbusters, do you remember the heat it got?
Yeah.
The uprisal it got from the nerd community for completely rebooting what people thought was already.
And then all those people were deemed to be sexist.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. And in the end, it had nothing to do with the fact that they were women that were cast as the four ghosts. It was the fact that it was being... The
comedy was horrible.
It was rebooted.
It was weak.
Perfection was made over when it didn't need to be. And it was made in a cheap way with stupid slapstick humor that I'm told that the majority of the dialogue wasn't even written. It was mostly ad-libbed by the actors who were put on for their SNL ad-lib skills.
And the only character that made me feel a connection to Ghostbusters was Chris Hemsworth, and he was supposed to be just like the secretary.
The dumb secretary.
Yeah.
And I've never even seen it. I refused.
Okay.
But I've seen and researched it enough to know enough to be talking about it.
It was weak. My perception on it was that if it was a standalone movie and it wasn't supposed to be a reboot of a classic, it was still weak.
It was still weak. Yeah.
It was garbage. I like a lot of Melissa McCarthy's movies. I love Chris Hemsworth. It fell short of
Even like Kristen Wiig.
Yeah. Of anything. I mean, even if it was his own, you know, brand new, fresh approach to a movie, it was eh. And then when you put an eh movie as a reboot of a classic.
Yeah, it got some backlash.
Rough.
Some serious backlash. And so the only thing they can do was demonize the people as misogynistic and, you know, just anything they could do to get away with it.
I mean, in comparison for this and that, it's like Afterlife is a movie that fans not only can get behind, like they'll tap that shit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, and nobody was more concerned than me going into this. My heart would have been broken driving home with you guys if they had disrespected this.
Yeah.
Like no tears would have been shed, but it would have been like a childhood, you know, something near and dear to your childhood had just been shit on.
Yeah, like finding out Santa Claus isn't real.
Yeah, just like that.
What?
No, I was a little concerned with the casting of Paul Rudd in it because I love Paul Rudd, but I wouldn't have necessary. If, like, if you said, hey, if you were to picture a new Ghostbusters movie, who would you cast? That probably wouldn't have come to mind.
Exactly.
But I thought he was excellent.
He was. And it was nice that he wasn't a Ghostbuster.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because I think if he would have been, it would have been bad because, like you said earlier, the comparisons would have been inevitable and you just can't compare.
Mm-hmm. Correct. So I thought they did a good job of even like tying up ends and you know, we are full circle reviews here, right? Mm-hmm. Bringing some things full circle from the original 1984 movie. Just as small as, you know, the secretary returned.
Mm-hmm. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Janine
Melnitz.
Yeah.
And I didn't recognize her at first. I'm like, who the hell is that? And Luke's like, it's the secretary. And I'm like, oh yeah. Okay.
Ghostbusters, what do you want?
Yes. 100%.
That jersey. Mm.
So I thought that was great. I thought that I liked even the part where they were in the cave or cavern or whatever it was. And the years were written on the wall. Yeah. The fact that they had 1984.
Yeah.
And what did they call it? They called it the New York mass supernatural event, something like that.
Uprising or
something like that.
Something like that. Well, so they like referenced the first movie. So they paid homage to it in the fact that they acknowledged it.
Well, and in a separate scene, I think when she was in the basement or like the underground area, wasn't it playing on one of the TVs too? Like the...
Yeah, the original commercial.
Are you troubled by strange noises in the middle of the night?
Yeah.
You get to,
that was good, Luke.
Thank you.
That was very good.
Do you have feelings of dread in your basement or attic?
Yeah, I could. Sounds like the start of a porno.
Chapter and verse, I can quote.
Wow, Justin. So I really like that they actually took that commercial in its entirety and they didn't just play clips of it. It wasn't just like they, you know, panned by and it was happened to be playing. They played the commercial
all the way to we're ready to believe you.
Well, and she called the number and it was still working. That was pretty awesome.
Yes. I thought that was really a neat way of doing it.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty cool. And then again, we kind of mentioned about the Sigourney Weaver, that end scene, the post-credit scene. She actually looked
pretty good. I was surprised.
She looked damn good. She's in her 60s, isn't she?
Yeah. I think she's older than that. I think she's late 60s, early 70s. I mean, she looks more feminine
now than she did in the 80s.
I'm not pulling out.
No.
I refuse.
Wow. She looked damn good.
But yeah, it did go full circle. I mean, we open in the 1984 one to Bill Murray doing, to Venkman doing the same test.
To the clothes scene. To the
woman and the guy. And he's blatantly shocking the dude, even though he's getting a couple right.
and the guy calls him on it.
And then the girl's getting them all wrong. And he's just like, oh, man, you're amazing.
We should do more of this one-on-one.
Yeah. It's this pickup artist technique.
You can't help but fucking love him.
Total pedo vibes.
No.
So I love that they did
I guess they're of age.
They were college students.
They did it in reverse. As the post scene.
Yeah.
So I actually like that they flipped the script and that Sigourney Weaver was
doing it to him.
Doing it to him. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
And so I thought that was great. Turns out that
he marked the cards.
Yes.
That was his reason for getting them all right.
Well, I like that she asked him and he lied and she zapped him.
Uh-huh.
Like, did you mark these cards? No.
Yeah, I thought it was cute as hell.
So, okay. Well, that's awesome. I loved all of those little tidbits, especially because after the movie, I wanted to come home and rewatch the first one.
You did. And we put it on. And fell asleep.
Well, it was late.
It was late.
But
the only other scene I want to talk to you guys about is the final battle when the three Ghostbusters make their appearances known in their OG uniforms and are battling. And you have Phoebe holding the proton pack with Egon's help. And all three of them slowly turn their heads over. And it's almost like actors breaking character. It felt like... for nostalgia, how they all kind of turn over and see Egon's apparition. And it just, that's probably the one scene that got me the most was seeing the four of them there and all of them having that realization come upon them that he was selfless and had, you know, essentially threw them under the bus to save the world and how they now realize that. And just seeing them look at him. And I think even one or two of them was tearing up.
I think so too.
I want to say Aykroyd for sure was. I think
so, yeah.
And maybe
Murray was like playing it off a little bit. It seemed like he would.
So I want to talk about that a little bit. How did you feel about Egon Spengler's ghost through the movie? Did you like that? Did you not like that?
I liked it. I loved it. I got chills like almost every time when we were watching it in the theater.
I felt it was amazingly accurate representation of what he would look like.
I thought so too. I actually really liked I mean, take it or leave it, right? I actually really like that they didn't have him talking, though.
Yeah, exactly. Same.
Because I think that would have ruined it.
Because his voice is one of a kind.
Right. And I think that that would have made it challenging. I also think it would have taken away from the presence on screen. I thought they did a nice job of a homage or a paying respect.
Yeah, it's some, like, nice symbolism, mm-hmm. having his character there, but not speaking, just kind of guiding silently.
Yes.
Almost like the real actor was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Silently guiding the movie.
He didn't need to speak.
No, it was cool.
I mean, it was others said what they needed to say to him, and his nodding and was enough.
Yeah.
Well, and for me, I felt like there was some symbolism with that fight scene that, like, you know, this new generation isn't going to be able to take on, you know, and save the world by themselves. They need help, you know, by the first generation. For some reason, I picked up some symbolism, you know, like everything that we're seeing in the world and everything that's going on, like, it's going to take everybody for change to happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not just the new loudest people are going to be able to do it. For some reason, I found myself like with this recurring thought going on, and
I could see
I don't know if that's some symbolism that they wanted to come across, but it's something that did.
Well, I appreciate that too, because it paid a huge respect towards history.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is, yeah, you might have the same tools, but you don't have the knowledge and wisdom of the people before you. That's not passed down.
True.
And the problem is, you know, human nature is human nature, whether it's 6,000 years ago or it's 6 days ago, people are motivated by the same things. Now the material items might change, whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, gold versus cash dollar versus
Bitcoin,
right? The currency or the monetary value placed on tangible items might change. But the reality is human nature is still power, greed, sex, wealth. There's still motivating factors.
And Ghostbusters.
But my point is that it helps to take on or fight current battles, understanding the history that's come before it.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So
well said.
I'll get on my soapbox on that right there.
Yeah, I mean,
boys and girls.
Reach away.
A real piece of art is an interpretation of society and the time, right? So I guess we could call this movie a work of art.
I like it. I'll take it.
Amen. Fucking A.
Okay.
Fucking A.
So I thought it was interesting little tidbit of the off-screen feud that actually happened between Ramis and Murray.
Or Aykroyd, you mean? Or was it Murray?
No, it was Murray.
Because I know Murray has always been a kind of not controversial, but argumentative and kind of combative person. There's a lot of stories about him.
Well, come on, he's Bill Murray.
Well, so what happened...
That's why they killed him in Zombieland.
So I looked it up, and what happened was that Harold Ramis and Bill Murray had done a number of movies together. They were actually best of friends.
Okay.
And their friendship fell apart on the set of Groundhog Day.
Mm. Great movie, though.
Where they had such creative differences and opinions that Ramis actually grabbed Bill Murray by the collar and threw him into the wall. And Bill Murray refused to speak to him for 20 years after that. And this came out because Ramis's daughter actually, and she wrote a book called The Daughter of Ghostbusters. And she had written that, you know, he tried to kind of play it off like it didn't bother him, but really towards the end of his life, he had finally confessed that the rejection and dismissal from Bill Murray had really devastated him.
Oh, poor guy.
And so at the very end, and I thought this was interesting, and I'm curious what you guys think about this. At the very end
of his life,
Bill Murray showed up with a box of donuts at 7 a.m. and a police escort. Ramis wasn't even able to speak. He was at the point where he couldn't even talk.
Okay.
And so it said in the article I read that they sat down together and didn't hash over the past, but just hung out for a few hours. Well, how could they hash over the past? The man couldn't talk.
Yeah. It's pretty cool, though.
But I guess that he had tried to make amends at the end.
Well, and most people do.
Well, okay. As far as Murray making amends, there was the Grammys or the Emmys. One of the either Grammys or Emmys where he showed up in his Ghostbusters outfit shortly after Harold Ramis' death. And do you remember, does anyone remember this?
I do. I remember seeing it. Yeah.
And he was like appalled that Ramis wasn't even mentioned in some compilation of who died this year, I think. I want to say that's what happened. Or maybe he wasn't you know, I don't know. Maybe it's just, I don't know what the circumstances was, but I do remember Murray showing up in his Ghostbusters outfit
and defending him.
And I felt like that might've been something to do with what you're talking about.
Yeah, It would have been right after that. And I'm.
Cause he was a straight dick. I mean, Murray was a dick that night, but it was like defense of someone he loved.
And what's sad is that aside, if Ramis really didn't get the recognition of somebody who had passed, he'd done a lot
for the movie industry. Absolutely.
A lot of movies. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunate.
When they recognize just about everybody.
Correct.
I mean, regardless of how obscure.
Ghostbusters and Groundhog Day were like two of the biggest movies of the '80s.
Yeah. So. Right. Right. So I think it's neat that they did try to have an amends made. And because of that, I think it's neat that they paid the homage the way they did. I think had they not tried to, you know, patch things up and then they put the ghost in the movie, it would have felt
weird.
Very strange.
I would agree. I would totally agree.
Yeah.
So.
Do you have something we can argue about?
next podcast, don't worry.
Yeah.
We need to watch another comedy.
All right, so do we want to go to?
It's gonna be called Why Luke.
Mm.
Budget.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Do we want to do both? Because I think it's interesting.
Get it, girl.
Do you want me to just tell you what the budget of 84 is, or do you want to guess?
Let's stay with guessing. Okay. 84. I'm gonna guess 12.5 million.
Okay.
2021. I'm gonna guess 66 million.
Okay, Justin.
84. I'm going to go with 22 million. This one, I'm going to go with 118.
Okay. The original was between 25 and 30 million of a budget. Nice. And 84.
Damn. And it's all that.
The budget.
Special effects.
Yeah. The budget today is 75 million.
Damn. What'd you guess for the budget today?
68, I think.
Nice, bud.
66. Yeah.
Right. And you guessed 22 for the original.
Well, yeah. One of the things we haven't touched on at all here is the sequel to Ghostbusters 2. We really haven't talked about that at all.
Do we really have
to talk about it?
Are you offended by it?
I'm not.
I felt it was a religious, like it religiously like held to the Ghostbusters universe.
It did, but I don't think there was a lot of connection.
Between
this movie and that movie.
It wasn't the caliber of the first.
I think that's probably why it didn't come up, because all the connections between Afterlife are really to
the 1984 original.
But still, there's plenty of memorable moments in the second. Because this is essentially a review of the entire franchise. I would say
the second one's a lot more funny.
I mean, the second one has a good villain in Viggo the Carpathian, the painting, the mood slime. It has iconic scenes. The the Statue of Liberty, you know, going to the museum. It doesn't hold up to the first, I feel, but it still was,
even though it is a little more funny in my opinion,
it is funny. I'll give you that. The first one just had a charm that is unmatched though. But, and I feel like that makes it funnier to me.
Agree to disagree.
All right. Right. We're back. Yeah.
Thanks for that.
But, the second one isn't the piece of shit that a lot of people say it is.
I wouldn't say it's a piece of shit.
But I think it might have been a little rushed due to the success of the first.
Yeah.
So anyways, just want to get on your soapbox for a minute and say, hey, the second one's okay.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's decent.
Yep. Well, I hadn't brought it up because I don't know the second one that well. Mm. I think I've seen it once.
Well, we just listened to the theme song a minute ago, Bobby Brown's the On Our Own. So they got with rap for the theme song of that one.
I wouldn't say rap. I'd say R&B.
Okay. Anyway, so the reason I brought up the first one a lot is because of, like Justin had said, the connections that were made between the first one and Afterlife. I thought they did a really good job of that. I didn't hate the second one when I saw it. It was fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
So I'd be willing to give it a try again. It's been a long time.
It's cool.
I think nowadays, especially after watching Afterlife, you'd enjoy it more.
Yeah.
It does have several memorable moments.
I bought the package, so we have all of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. So, all right, back to numbers, kids. Box office for the original versus the 2021 Afterlife.
84. I'm going to go 186 million.
Okay.
2021. I'm going to go 144.
Okay, Justin.
I'm going to go 110 for the original. 162 for Afterlife.
Okay. So I was quickly Googling to look it up because I had the box office data as of 12/2. So as a reminder, November 19th was the release date of Afterlife. So
it's been out for 3 weeks.
Correct. So as of right now, the Afterlife has a box office of $145.7 million.
Oof.
So it still has just about doubled.
Does anyone remember what I said?
No.
I could have swore it was close to that.
Could be.
I think I said 144.
I thought it was 160 something.
I think you're wrong.
162.
Go ahead.
Okay. So the original movie box office, $282.2 million in 1984.
Nice. Hashtag winning before inflation. Wow. Good shit.
You do kind of look like Charlie Sheen.
You look. Oh, because I said winning. Okay. I was wondering where the fuck that came from.
I was too, but okay. Yeah. I get it now.
Before the drugs.
Winning. Yeah. All right. Ratings. So, Luke, would you like to kick us off on your rating?
Yes, I would. I think as long as I may live, whether I die tomorrow or die when I'm 88 years old, I will always love Ghostbusters.
Just kidding.
I will always love Ghostbusters. It will always have a place in my heart. And I will always have memories of being a kid and just being infatuated with it.
To be clear, we're rating Afterlife and not the franchise.
I agree, but that's...
Okay, I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And that's why I'm going to give my rating of an A+. Because okay. I loved it. I have yet to ever have applauded at the end of a movie, but the ride was so fun. The universe was so respected. And the feels were so powerful for me that giving it anything less than an A+ is not even possible.
Okay. Justin.
Giving it anything but an A+ is possible because I'm going to give it an A-.
Okay.
And the only reason I give it an A- is because I felt like we talked about earlier, a couple of the characters are interchangeable. He could have put anybody in that role. And typically in a Ghostbusters movie, that's not true. The characters are held in a very high standard, I guess I'd say. And the only other reason is the story flawed in just one aspect was like, I felt like him discovering the car was just like kind of eh for me. I was just like randomly walking and like, oh, look, there's a car in here. Oh, look, it's cool. And like he knew nothing about the car. I felt like that was like the only flaw in the story for me, but that just detracted from it a little bit. And besides that, everything else was great.
Okay.
I mean, I love the McKenna Grace. I thought she did a great job as Phoebe and, you know, be a character that I'm sure people will remember for her. She's pretty young. So for the rest of her acting career.
Okay. I give it a high A-.
Okay.
For very similar reasons. I will argue with you on the car because I actually thought that was pretty clever because everything was kind of discovered in the movie.
I'd argue with you on that.
Yeah. The whole basement, the suits, everything was kind of stumbled upon. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was kind of neat. They wouldn't know anything about the car because they didn't know anything about their grandfather. So I feel like that was.
I didn't like that.
Okay. That's okay. So that's my argument with you on that.
Well, I don't like you. Go on, Kristen.
So I give it a high A-, like a 93%.
Suck it, Luke.
Because I felt, like I said before, some of the characters were a little...
meh.
Boxes checked, right? They literally like made the aspect check the box of the need rather than putting a little more emphasis.
Yeah, Luke could have played one of them.
Wow. I love Phoebe.
Is that an insult? I don't
know. I'm not sure. I loved Phoebe. I loved podcast. I love Paul Rudnick.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the majority of the other new characters were weak.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say if the movie went up until the final battle scene, I would have given it an A+.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least a strong, strong high A.
I get you.
I think the final battle scene, coupled with a couple of the weaknesses I felt in some of the characters, put me at a low A, high A-, because it just kind of fell a little short, although I freaking love that trap scene.
Mm-hmm.
So That's where I stand. One thing that I didn't mention that I really liked about the movie too was the fact that Paul Rudd was the dumb kid teacher. That's what he said.
Yeah, because he just would put on movies.
And he'd put on movies, and he put on Cujo yeah. and Child's Play.
Yeah.
These are movies for
summer. Horror movies.
Yeah, horror movies. And then he'd be in the other room looking at his maps. I thought that was
seismic activity.
Yes, I thought that was pretty epic. I feel
like that was intentional for him to do that. He knew that the parents probably wouldn't approve of them watching it, so they would be infatuated
with
it.
It was summer school, though. True. That's like pretty much what summer. I've been to summer school. It's pretty much how summer school is. Like, we have 2 weeks to teach you a whole class. There you go.
Not going to happen. Yeah.
See, I went to like the enrichment classes in summer school.
Did you feel enriched?
Most of them were kind of lame.
Yeah.
But I never had to do remedial summer school. So anyway, so a strong A minus, an A minus, and an A plus puts us at a
weak A.
A weak A.
Yeah.
Borderline, like a 93.6689. Okay, we'll go with that.
I collect spores, mold, and fungus.
I've been waiting all for a review to say something like
you
that.
You suck at life.
I know.
Don't worry.
Oh my God.
Our next review, we will be hating each other again.
Why?
So on that note, signing off, Full Circle Reviews, catch us on our next review of Luke's pick, Lake Mungo.
Lake Mungo, yeah. Great movie.
Fuck no, it's not.
Let's sign off and then talk.
See you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
And hello, Apollo.